Section from 1 Timothy to kind of illustrate and to set a thought before us for the message today. In 2 Timothy in the first chapter, I'd like to read the first 12, 1 Timothy and the first 12 verses of the first chapter of, I'll get it right, 1 Timothy chapter 6. I was on the right page, wrong lesson. 2 Timothy is a cross page. 1 Timothy chapter 6. Let as many servants as are under the yoke count their own masters worthy of all labor, that the name of God and his doctrine be not blasphemed. And they that have believing masters, let them not despise them because they are brethren, but rather do them service because they are faithful and beloved, partakers of the benefit. These things teach and exhort. If any man teach otherwise and consent not to wholesome words, even the words of our Lord Jesus Christ, and to the doctrine which is according to godliness, he is proud, knowing nothing, but doting about questions and strifes of words, whereof cometh envy and strife, railings, evil surmisings, perverse disputings of men of corrupt minds and destitute of the truth, supposing that gain is godliness, from such withdraw thyself. But godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and raiment, let us be therewith content. But they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and in many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all evil, which, while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. But thou, O man of God, flee these things and follow after righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, meekness. Fight the good fight of faith. Lay hold on eternal life, whereunto thou art also called and hast professed a good profession before many witnesses. Paul here in speaking and writing to Timothy is kind of giving us an overview of our life, isn't he? He's talking about the daily affairs of our life and the things that we have to contend with outside the walls of this building and through the first 6 days of the week. And then everything kind of changes when we come in here and we all share a faith. We all share a love, not only a love for God, but we share love with one another. I can tell you, I don't love everybody that I work with, but I love everybody here. I can't trust the prayers of those that I work with, but I can trust that you are praying for me, and I know those prayers will have their effect. The Lord will hear them, and he'll answer them. But, you know, I live in two worlds, and most of us are that way. We have to deal with the cares and concerns of the world, but we also have this trust that is placed within us. It's called our salvation. It's our relationship with God, our love that he has shed abroad in our hearts, and that we are expected, not just expected, but commanded to share with the lost world, no matter how evil and perverse they might be. We read about those people in the first part of this chapter. We have to learn how to, we'll call it balance just for the lack of another word, but how do we learn to deal with this kind of a dichotomy in our lives where we have these two separate, seemingly conflicting worlds that we live in? And the answer that we find is in the sixth verse. Godliness with contentment is great gain. The contentment is what I want to speak about this morning. I want us to focus our thoughts, our minds, and our hearts upon this idea of contentment. And how do we learn to be content with the Lord? In Philippians, in the 4th chapter, in the 11th verse, Paul wrote this. He said, I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. Do you know about the history of Paul? I suppose you do. I suppose that when he wrote this, he was in prison, or at least in chains. He was bound in some way. If he wasn't bound physically, he was bound spiritually, and he had to deal with the slings and arrows, not only of the enemies of Israel, but also his enemies, Rome, even though he was a Roman citizen. He had a difficult life, and yet what were his words? I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. So he was one of those who traditionally and proverbially made lemonade out of lemons, didn't he? We need to learn how to do that. It is not any good for me to stand up here now for the next 20 minutes or so, hopefully it won't be any longer than that, and try to tell you that you need to be content with things unless I can give you the reason and maybe some tools that you can use that will help you to be content with your life and find true contentment in every circumstance that you find yourself in. It's a process. You're not going to walk out of here with a full toolbox that'll help you tomorrow and it'll change your life and turn it around. This is something that you have to build up. I've got a number of tools in my garage. They're scattered all over the floor in there right now, but they'll all fit into that toolbox. But I want to tell you, some of those tools were my dad's tools. Some of them were my grandfather's tools. Some of them are things that I picked up off the street, and some of them are things that I have bought in stores, and I use every one of them. I know how to use every one of them, but it's taken years to gather all of those tools in order to learn what it means to be truly content in life. You've got to gather these tools for yourself. They'll come from all different sources, and I hope to get to that idea in just a couple of minutes. How can we find true contentment? Well, I think the simple answer is we'll find it in the Bible, and hopefully I'll help you to find some of those answers or at least key you into some places that you can search today to try to find it for yourself. Where will we find it? Is it a dream or is it a reality? And I'm not going to tell you right up front, when you begin, it's going to be difficult. It's hard. I know that in my personal life that I've got a lot of things going on in my daily life, but every one of us does. And a lot of those things that are going on are kind of described in that sixth chapter of 1 Timothy that we read about, where I'm involved in a job. I have a job. Most of us have to have one. We're not independently wealthy. The Lord didn't fill my bank account to where I could just spend out of it and not have to worry about putting more in. Anybody got that kind of a blessing? If you've got more than you need, there's probably somebody here that could use some of it. But we can't share that kind of wealth, the kind of wealth that the Lord gives us. Now, I've got a bank account that's full of love, and you know what? I haven't learned to tap that very well either and to share that. But you know, one thing I have learned in the years that I've been saved since 1971, so that's coming up on 31 years, I've learned that when I share the love of God that He placed in my heart that night when He saved my soul, when I empty myself of all that love, the next thing I know, it's full and I'm overflowing again with that love. I remember a revival that I went to one time a number of years ago. I don't remember if there were people saved at that revival or if it was just the way that the gospel affected me that night. But when I walked out of there on that Sunday night, I didn't feel like the world could touch me for about 3 days. Honestly, I didn't feel like I had to change my clothes or shave or shower or anything. I just felt so clean, so protected, so filled with the Spirit. God just filled me up. And if you've never had that experience, I hope that one day you will. But you know, God can do that, and He will do that. We just need to use what He's given us so that He can refill us with more of the same. I want to tell you that being content in life is both a reality and a dream. It's both a possibility and a reality. It's both a promise and a hope. We can be content. We can be more content. If you think you're content today with your life, you can become more content. But it involves more than we sometimes realize, and sometimes more than we want to admit to. Amos wrote in the third chapter of Amos, the third verse, he said, "Can two walk together except they be agreed?" And that's the first thing that we need to understand about being content in this life, is that we need to learn to walk together. I'm not talking about John, you and me walking together. I'm not talking about walking together with Sandra. I haven't seen her for months. It's good to see you here. That's not the kind of walking together that I'm talking about, even though I know that we won't have any trouble walking together in this world. When it says that can two walk together except they be agreed, it's not talking about men walking together exclusively. It's talking about walking together with God. It's both of those things. The Hebrew that comes from is really two words, walking together. And it has to do with walking in unity, or really more succinctly, in unison, locked together, in step, not just for today, but for all the tomorrows and for eternity. That's how firmly we need to be committed to walking with God in order to enjoy the contentment that is possible for us in this life. We need to be willing to walk with God each day. And that's going to mean sacrifice if we do that. The picture that we have in the Hebrew is as of a groom standing before the preacher, the bride coming in through the back door, being ushered to the front, the ceremony being over, and the minister saying that they are now husband and wife, giving the husband permission to kiss his wife, and they walk out together, not as two, the way that they came in, but as one. One flesh. That's how closely we need to walk with God in order to be truly content. I think we all understand that. But you know what? Back to where we were a few minutes ago. You can't be walking together and content, walking with God, until you're saved. So it begins with that salvation experience. You may be happy for a short time walking here. You may enjoy things in life. You may be content with your job. You may have a good family. You may have a lot of wonderful things that you enjoy that give you great pleasure. But when you think about the eternal things, when you think about the fact that life is just for a short while, when you look at me and you see this man who's beginning to get wrinkled and blotchy and gray hair, realize that one day you're going to be there as a young person. One day you're going to be not 20 or 30, but you're going to be 50 or 60 or 70 years old. Life doesn't look as the same from here as it does from there. You're going to need to be content with God. You're going to need to be at peace with God because life is short. And believe me, from this end, it looks really short. Being one with God is more than just being a Christian. I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago when I was preaching at Faith on an invitation. Now, some people say that the word Christian means Christ-like, but I don't particularly like that definition myself. When somebody is a Christian, what I think of is somebody who is Christ's. Belongs to Christ, saved by grace in the Savior, because they have been saved by grace. A true Christian, I'll go further than that, I've shared this with some of you, but the Bible tells us that they were first called Christians at Antioch. Oh, church members. Now, some of you are going to disagree with me on that. You might argue. I'm not going to argue with you. But I think, honestly, my belief is that true Christians are members of the true church. Amen. Saved, scripturally baptized, members in good standing of the Lord's church. But I'll not go further with that. If it's more than just wearing a name. It's more than just being saved. It's more than a creed, a belief. It's more than a church attendance or your name on the rolls of a church. It's more than baptism. It's more than all these things. It's walking step by step in unison, day by day, week by week, year by year with Jesus Christ. That's the beginning of our contentment. It's what we, and contentment, I think we have to look at it this way. It's as it was in the days of John Bunyan when he wrote The Pilgrim's Progress. Contentment is out there someplace. But it's also the journey that it takes to get there. Contentment is a progressive thing. We'll enjoy every day of our lives. It'll grow on us, and we'll grow. I'll get to the steps to finding that contentment in just a minute. A couple of weeks ago in here, I think it was on a Wednesday night, one of the members made the statement, stood up and blessed the Lord and said, "My life is so simple." Ever thought about that? What does it mean to have a simple life? I'll tell you what it means. When I've thought about that a lot over the last few weeks, it means that I don't have a lot of things that complicate my life. Most of the things that complicate our life are really hindrances to our spiritual life, aren't they? The other day we were coming to church and we had seen a new building going up over off the bypass and wondered what it was going to be. And I saw a sign there the other day and it says it's going to be storage buildings. Sister Sue works for storage company. And I saw that and I asked myself, what do people need with more stuff? If the house isn't big enough to hold it, they got to go buy a storage building or rent a storage building someplace to store it. If they're not going to use it, get rid of it. But you know what? We could all do with a lot less in our life, and we would have a simpler life if we would just shed some of the baggage that we carry around. I can't quote the scripture, can't remember now. I think it may have been Peter that said we should lay aside every burden, everything that kind of strangles us and that holds us back. We should set all those things aside. Make your life simple. This morning, Annette was worried because I stayed in bed longer than I thought I was going to, but I told her I'd been up really since about 2:30 this morning. Got up with the first light, and I was standing at the kitchen window looking out in my backyard. And in the first light, the robins were already out there in the yard. Now, I mowed the grass yesterday, so it's a little bit shorter, and it's a little easier picking for them, but they were out there plucking worms out of the yard. And I thought, those poor worms, you know, they didn't have a chance. I've got a box in my garage. It's on the garage floor. I'm going to take it back outside pretty soon, but it's a tote. Drilled some holes in the bottom of it, filled it full of potting soil. I had a box of worms that I bought over at Kmart or Walmart someplace, and I put them in there last fall. And over the winter, after feeding those worms that are in that box, I've got a box full of worms. You say, Brother Brown, where are you going with this? You know what? Those worms in that box, they don't have a worry. They don't have a care. They don't have to worry about the starlings and the gray, the big blackbirds that are out there. They don't have to worry about the robins that are out there going to pluck them up and eat them. They got to worry about me and my grandson taking them fishing with us. But other than that, they don't have to worry. You get the picture? They're in a cage. They're in a box. They're protected. And their life is simple because they don't have anything to worry about. Somebody told me one time about a canary. You know, you take a canary and you put him in the cage and you think, oh, that poor bird all cooped up in that little cage. I'm just going to open the door and let it loose. Open the doors and let it fly out. But you know what? Just about as soon as it gets out the door, another bigger bird is going to come down and take it home for dinner. My worms in my garage and that canary in a cage, they're free. They don't have worries. They don't have concerns. Their life is simple. And we need to understand that our life is simple too when we'll just stay within the confines that God gives us, live within His limits. We are free, 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 and free from fear and danger. That's important. Free from threats and temptations and trials and tribulation. If we'll walk close enough to the Lord, He'll help us to stay clear of those things. But when you're free to do anything you want, open that cage, go out in the world, crawl in the grass, there's something's going to come along and get you. Freedom to do something isn't really freedom at all. It puts you in danger. But freedom from things is what gives you peace and will help lead you to true contentment, to be freed from, to have a simple life. Now, most of us have debt. Most of us have mortgages. Most of us have obligations that we have. Most of us have jobs. I talked about that a minute ago. We're not freed entirely from those things, but we can take what we have. We can, over a period of time, we can get rid of it. Let me give you an example of that. I'm not going to make it another 10 minutes, so bear with me. My son-in-law's brother is staying with Chris and Heather. His name's Michael. And Michael is a young man. He's just in his 30s. He's never married. But he has about $100,000 worth of debt. Went to school, borrowed money to go to school. Was driving one night, had a wreck, didn't have any insurance on his car. Hit another guy that did have insurance. And so That man's insurance company is after Michael to pay the, you know, off that, pay what that car's worth. Mike ended up with no car of his own, $60,000 or $70,000 worth of student debt, all sorts of consumer debt, credit cards, all of those kinds of things, and he's just holding his head each night when he sits at the table trying to figure out, how am I going to get out from all of this load of debt that I have? How am I going to get shed of all of these burdens that I bear? How am I going to ever be free? How is my life ever going to be simple? But I want to tell you what he's done. He came down here from Michigan about 8 or 9 months ago. He found 2 part-time jobs. He works about 10 to 12 hours a day. Works probably 6 and 7 days a week sometimes. But he managed to put up about $5,000 in his account over the last 9 months. And you know what? If he'll continue to do that, and if he'll take part of that money that he's saved up, he can pay those debts off one at a time. Now, I'm not trying to be Dave Ramsey, okay? But he can do it one bite at a time, one payment at a time. You can get out of debt. You can get out of trouble. You can make your life simpler, but it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to be a process, and you're going to have to dedicate your life to doing that. You're going to have to make a conscious effort to do that. But you can make your life to be simple. First thing that you need to do, number one, I'll try to go through these quickly. Get a good night's sleep. You know, have you ever noticed that? When you don't get a good night's sleep, that the next day things are a whole lot tougher for you? Usually, it's when you don't get a good night's sleep, it's because you're thinking about what you've got to face tomorrow. But not having that good night's sleep just makes all those things much worse than they would have otherwise been. So that's number one. Get a good night's sleep. Before you go to bed at night, what should you do? Everybody knows the answer to that. Pray. Pray for a good night's sleep. Ask the Lord to help you through the night. Take your cares to Him and leave them there. Don't take them to the pillow with you at night. And then when you wake up in the morning, first thing that you need to do is pray. What did Daniel do? He prayed 3 times in the day. He wasn't ashamed to pray. We can read it back about that back in the book of Daniel. I think it's in the 6th chapter. He prayed 3 times a day. He wasn't secretive about his prayers. Other people looked at him when he was praying, and they went and told the king that he prayed. And because Daniel prayed 3 times in a day, he was cast into the lion's den. But he didn't make excuses. He didn't fail to pray at the beginning of the day. It's important. That's the beginning of our day. Pray for strength to work, to labor, to serve. Don't pray for strength for leisure and pleasure. Pray for strength to do what God would be pleased with, not to satisfy the flesh. Pray for those around you. You need to pray for yourself too, but just think about what God just did. He brought you safely through another night. Think about all those around you that are lost and undone. And that's the majority of the people that we work with. They are lost. They are going to die and go to hell. And when they go to hell, they'll have no end to dark nights. And the Lord just brought you through one. So thank Him for that night that He brought you through. Thank Him for the opportunities that He's going to present you with during the day. Be with Him in your prayers. Make sure that He hears your prayers. Be diligent in your prayers. Do it every day. I tell this story on my wife, but she's the best prayer that I know of. I don't know of a morning that I haven't, you know, that I've paid attention to what she's doing and where she is. She'll stop midway in her preparations for the day to go into the back bedroom and sit down in a big old blue rocker there and pray every morning. Many times I just get up and hit the floor running. I'm trying to do better. I'm trying to make it a habit to begin my day with prayer because it's important. I see how important it is in her life. I know that it is important for me to do the same. So I'm trying to change my life, and that's one of the beginning things that I can do is to pray at the beginning of each day. You know what? The third thing that we need to do after we get a good night's sleep and after we pray when we get up, we need to worship Him throughout the day. You say, well, how do we worship God throughout the day?
We worship Him by looking at the world around us, and we pick from that world instead of picking at it. Don't be negative. Don't look at all the bad things that are going around, but look for the blessings. Look for the opportunities that God presents to you. Be kind of like the worms that are in my worm bed. You know, thank God that He's got His protective hand. Thank God that you're in the sheltering arms of God. In John 17, when Jesus was praying that prayer for His church, He said that they are in the world, but not of the world. As I am in the world, I am not of this world. And He asked His Father to care for us because we were in the Spirit of God, not in the spirit of the world. Remember that Spirit that dwells in you. Worship Him that way. Worship Him like you are who you want this world to see you to be. Now I'm gonna say this. I'm not gonna say it to beat myself on the breast. Not to say how good a person I am. But I want you to because the comment was made to me this morning when I walked in the door. You look like a preacher. You'll seldom see me at a church service or a Bible study or anything without a shirt and a tie on, sometimes without a coat. But, you know, I kind of want this world to be able to look at me and see who I am or what I am, even when they can't hear me. It's important that we look like what we want this world to see us as. So don't take that as you know, me trying to build myself up. I'm not trying to do that. But that's how I feel. My first pastor said that we should dress when we come to the house of God in a way so that we would not be ashamed if Jesus Himself were to come through the back doors of the church. Would we run for the back door if He came in? Or would we be willing? Would we be proud to bow before Him the way we came to church? Wear your best. Be your best. Look your best, but not only on Sundays, every day of the week. We can worship Him in that way. Henry Smith was asked not too long before he died, why do you go to church? You can't hear anything. Brother Smith's answer to that was fairly simple. I don't have it exactly right, but he said, I want people to see who I am, what I am. He said, I can listen with my heart even if I can't listen with my ears. But he wanted to stand up and be known as a true Christian. Was his life always full of joy and happiness and contentment? Was his belly always full? I don't think so. But you know what? I believe that man was content up until his last days. Every once in a while, fourth point, make a checkup from the neck up. See what's going on in here. James said that when lust conceives, it brings forth sin. So make sure that your thoughts are pure. In order to be content, you've got to get all of those things out of your mind. And the best way to do that is to be walking closely with God each day that you have. If you don't have one, I suggest that you get an 1828 version of Noah Webster's Dictionary. Big green book, it's about that thick. It costs about $50, but it's invaluable. He says in there, this is his definition of sin. You won't find this definition in a modern dictionary. Sin is a voluntary departure of a moral agent from a known rule of rectitude or duty prescribed by God. That's the part you won't find in a modern dictionary. Prescribed by God. When we sin, we go absolutely against the will of God. That's what a sin is. We need to be sure that when we talk, when we walk, the company that we keep, the places where we go, that we're not sinning in all those things. I knew a deacon a few years ago at one of our sister churches. When he started his job, he worked at a service station that had been converted to kind of a convenience store. And all they sold was snack foods and things like that. Later on, they brought in tobacco, beer, some of those things. And he continued to work there. Pardon me. I asked him, I said, why do you continue to work there? He said, well, I'm too old and nobody else would hire me, so I'll just work here until I retire. You know, there comes a point with many of us in our jobs where we just have to say sayonara to the people that we're working with. The job that I had before we moved to Tennessee from Montana, there was fraud going on in the bank. That was my job, to look into all the operations of the bank, and I found it in a couple different areas. I went to my boss and I told him about it, and he said, Jeff, just don't, you know, everything isn't black and white in the world. And I said, David, that's why I'm leaving. This is wrong. That was our sole source of income. My wife was at home with a three-year-old and a one that was about 3 months old, and I just left. I just had to leave. You can't mix wrong with right, sin with righteousness. The Bible tells us very clearly that. You just can't mix it, those things. And if it's wrong, it's wrong. And you might have to, in order to simplify your life, you might have to change jobs. But you know, when the Lord lets you know, if you're walking as you should with Him, when you're walking together in harmony with Him, as Amos described it, when you know that this is what is needed, it's not going to be hard for you to leave that job and seek another one. And the Lord's going to lead you to something else that's more suitable, where you'll have a good witness, where you won't take the baggage of the world home with you and worry about becoming entangled with the sinfulness of the world. Whatsoever ye do, Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians, whatsoever ye do, do all to the glory of God. Know your weaknesses. This is part of the checkup from the neck up. Know your weaknesses. I want to tell you and remind you about this. The devil knows your weaknesses better than you do. He knows where you are vulnerable. So don't give in to your weaknesses. Don't give in to the devil. Don't compromise. You can tell I don't do this often because I'm running out of voice. Realize in your life every day that there will be temptations. There will be trials and tribulation. Paul spoke about that in 1 Corinthians in the 10th chapter and the 13th verse. He said there won't be any trials or tribulations, though, that come to you that he's not aware of. He will give you the means of escape. That's paraphrasing, but he will lead you through those things. But you've got to realize what you're involved with. You've got to go into every situation, go to work every day realizing what you're dealing with in this world. If you're going to be content, you're going to have to be content first with yourself, that you're where you need to be. And then he'll help you through those situations. Fifth point. Well, really the sixth point here. Meditate. I guess this is kind of akin to praying to the Lord. But when Daniel went to the Lord three times in a day, he prayed and he meditated. He sought the Lord. And he praised the Lord for what he had done, and he asked the Lord for instructions and directions on which ways that he should go. He had an awesome responsibility in Babylon. He had a terrifying responsibility to serve God and all of the people that were responsible to him. He had a terrible burden, I'm sure. And so he had to meditate on what was right. He had to seek the Lord, because we don't have omniscient minds. We don't have the capacity to hold and understand everything that we need to know for every day of our life, today, tomorrow, the next day, next week, next month, next year. We have to get it a little bit at a time. At least I do. So meditate on the Lord. Point number 7. You have to have motivation. Paul, in the 10th chapter, 1 Corinthians, and the 31st verse over there, he said, whether therefore ye eat or drink or whatsoever ye do, do all to the glory of God. Just across the page from where he was talking about fighting temptations and being delivered from those temptations. We need to have a whatsoever mindset, not a whatever. I don't like that saying. I've done it. I say that to my wife every Friday night when we pick up the grandsons to bring them home with us. And that'll ask me, where do you want to go? I say, whatever. It doesn't make any difference to me. We finally gotten to the point where we just let the boys decide. And then if we don't like their choice, we might mediate a little bit. But we need to make sure that whatsoever we do unto the glory of God. Make sure that you realize what the consequences, what the direction of your life is, and where the destination, or what the destination is that you seek. In order to be content, you've got to do that. We've got to make conscious choices. Don't let the world sweep you up and take you with it, but be in control of your life. You have to seek fellowship wherever you are. Another point, seek the fellowship of fellow Christians. Now, you may not find them where you are. Now, what's the answer to that? There isn't another old-fashioned Baptist in the office where I work. Brother Brad works with a Jew. Most of us work mostly with men and women of other denominations than our own. Most of us work with men and women that are not even saved by the grace of God. But you know, it should be our desire to see that they be saved, shouldn't it? And so what we need to do as far as seeking fellowship is we need to foster those friendships and hope and pray to God that those friendships will blossom into a relationship so that we can walk together with them with God in salvation. That should be the desire that we have for every day of our lives, is to seek the fellowship of those who walk around us and to foster fellowship, to form those relationships in the best way that we know how. Faithful relationships do not hunger to satisfy fleshly appetite, rather to fill life with manna from heaven and his saints. We need to do all that we do to honor and glorify God. I'm almost done. Read. One of the things that I guess that we leave out of our lives most often is to study. Paul wrote to Timothy, he says, study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed. We need to study more. Because when we open the Word of God, when we open a commentary, when we open a book of lessons that were written 100 or 400 years ago, we can learn from those. We'll be fed by those things that we read. Study to show thyself approved unto God. Meditate upon God's will and how he's working in your life. And the last thing is end the day the same way that you began it, in prayer. Thanking God for all that you've enjoyed, for all that you've experienced, for all that you've encountered through the day, for all of those things that you'll enjoy tomorrow as you experience God, as you walk along. Spend a day with God, and you'll never want to spend a day without him. If you can walk a day in this world content that you have walked it in the way that is most pleasing to God, you'll want to do it again tomorrow. Meditate. Think about that. In order to be content with God, you've got to do all of these things. Now, I want to just tell you what Brother Baxter wrote in the 1600s. This is Richard Baxter. He said pretty much the same thing. So begin your day in prayer. Sleep and prepare for the labor of the coming day. Pray, worship, remember your purpose, honor your calling, be aware and beware of temptations and shun all appearances of evil. Pray, meditate, glorify God. Do not be idle. Redeem your time for the greatest profit. Be moderate in eating and thankful for health. Be repentant, instant, fervent. Consider others above thyself. Reflect, be thankful, resolve conflicts. Examine your mind and soul and pray. Do that every day. Now you say, Brother Brown, I can't do all that. I don't have time for all of that. You know, the only part of all that I've said today that's going to take any time out of your day is to pray, pray, pray. If you'll pray, let God teach you and instruct you and fill you with purpose. And that will occupy your day content with God until the next opportunity to pray, and it'll be repeated over and over and over again. It begins with prayer. You say, I don't have time. Most of us don't spend 2 minutes in prayer every day. Multiply that times three, that's six. What if you pray 5 minutes in the morning, 5 minutes at lunch, 5 minutes in the evening before you go to bed? That's 15 minutes. That's nothing compared to the total time that you've got during the day. Don't say that you can't do that. Don't admit that you can't serve God for 3 or 4 or 6 or 15 minutes a day. That would be a sad thing. If you want to be content with God, if you want to find true contentment, do these things. Try these things. Begin your life every day with a good night's sleep and with prayer and with meditation and thankfulness and a positive attitude. Be an optimist. Be a person that people are drawn to. Preach to them. Teach them. Witness to them. Make friends of them. Make sure that they understand that you're their friend before anything else. Go home and conduct your home life as a husband or a wife in a way that would be pleasing to God, that God would walk in, that He's always welcome, the door's always welcome, your house is in good order. You'd never be embarrassed for God to walk in and see what your house looks like. If we'll just do it a little bit at a time, one day at a time, God will be pleased and we will be content. But it's just simple steps. Simple steps. I tried to keep it logical. I tried to keep it, or through me, the Lord just wanted you to know, it's not that hard. We just have to do it. I love those words, that witness and that testimony. My life is so simple. And from those simple words, I draw this to a conclusion today. Make your life simple as well, to be content with God. If you're not saved, you don't have help and you don't have hope. That little gnawing knowledge and that feeling back in the back of your mind or in your bosom is going to be telling you all the time, something's not right with me. You're never going to be content until you're saved by the grace of God. You'll enjoy true happiness and contentment for the remainder of your life. That's my message this morning. Brother Aaron, if you have a song. Whatever your needs might be today, whether it's for yourself or a family member. I guess I forgot to ask prayer, to open service in prayer. I was so anxious to get into my message. But I'd ask before we start singing, is there a special need on anyone's heart today? Anything at all? All right, let's remember these requests. I've been trying to get hold of one of my cousins about a family reunion. I haven't seen this particular cousin, I guess, in 30 years. I've talked to him, but I finally got an email this morning that from the people where he works, the company where he works, that he wasn't available, that his wife had passed away about a week or so ago from leukemia. I knew she'd been sick, but I just ask you to pray for my family, not only him, but also for my children, my sons-in-law. I've got a 7-year-old grandson. Pray for Annette and me that we'll be the kind of grandparents that will be an inspiration to them, and that when we're gone, that they'll have memories of us that are appropriate for a Christian. So, anything on anybody's heart.